우리 만나 지난다 난다나 아바야 자라나라 인다리 맞아 우리 만나 지난다 난다나 아바야 자라나라 빈다리 ಪಾವನ ಕೀರ್ತನ ಸ್ಮರಣ ವಂದನ ಪಾದ ಸೇವನ
Just worship the lotus feet of the son of Nanda, which make one fearless. Having obtained this rare human birth, cross over this ocean of worldly existence through the association of saintly persons. Both in the day and at night, I remain sleepless, suffering the pains of heat and cold, the wind and rain. For a fraction of flickering happiness, I have uselessly served wicked and miserly men. What assurance of real happiness is there in all of one's wealth, youthfulness, sons, and family members? This life is tottering like a drop of water on a lotus petal. Therefore, you should always serve and worship the divine feet of Lord Hari. Okay. The desire and great longing of Govinda Das to engage himself in the nine processes of bhakti, namely hearing the glories of Lord Hari and chanting those glories, constantly remembering him and offering prayers to him, serving the Lord's lotus feet, serving the Supreme Lord as a servant, worshipping him with flowers and incense and so forth, serving him as a friend and completely offering the Lord one's very self.
One of our great Vaishnava acharyas, Govinda Das, is describing the futility of seeking happiness, flickering moments of happiness, and the very fragile human form of life can pass very quickly, having not served the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead. What a great misfortune. So we'll chant together. This is a verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 23. And we'll chant it together. Very nice verse. Shantir avyartha kalatvam viraktir mana shunyata Ashabanda Samutkanta Namagani Sadaruchihi. Asaktis Tadguna Kaine. Pitis Tad Vishatis Tade. Ityadayo Nubhavasyur. Jata Bhavan Kure Jane. Translation. When the seed of ecstatic emotion for Krishna fructifies, the following 9 symptoms manifest in one's behavior. Forgiveness. Concern that time should not be wasted. Detachment. Absence of false prestige. Hope. Eagerness. A taste for chanting the holy name of the Lord. Attachment to the descriptions of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And affection for those places where the Lord resides, that is, a temple. Or a holy place like Vrindavan. These are all called anubhava, subordinate signs of ecstatic emotion. They are visible in a person in whose heart the seed of love of God has begun to fructify. And this is a verse or 2 verses from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami, where the stages of bhakti are elucidated. And this is describing a very elevated state, the bhava bhakti stage. The 3 divisions of topics in nectar devotion are sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. And bhava bhakti, or the seed of ecstatic emotion, is the beginning of the bhava bhakti stage. And there are symptoms indicated here, 9 in number. And one of them specifically is related to time. So from sadhana, properly followed, bhava will follow. Assuredly will follow if one patiently and perseverantly, just like the verses that I read yesterday from Sri Brahma Samhita, where the Supreme Lord is saying to Lord Brahma, assuredly, when there's perseverance in practice and following the proper standards and some eagerness in achieving the goal, gradually not only the practice is followed, but the eagerness to achieve the goal of the practice becomes stronger and stronger and stronger, naturally so, not artificially so, as the cleansing process by applying oneself to devotional service, there's cleansing. Cheta Dharpana Marjanam. And so the distracted attention going into temporary things is replaced by the growing attention to the eternal, and specifically the Supreme Person, the Supreme Eternal, and the eternal loving relationship, eternal service to the Personality of Godhead. In reading this verse and contemplating the verse, of course, a thought arose. And the thought is, the theme of our weekend, the specific to time and utilization of time properly. With the human form of life, that's a span of time. Then there's other measures of time. So moments, or a day, or a week, or a month, or a year, or our life. So smaller measures of time, larger measures of time. But the human form of life, like we've been hearing, the expanse is limited. It's foolish to think otherwise. It's such a valuable treasure. And what a great misfortune to not use this treasure for its proper use, its intended, God-intended purpose, to allow us, each one of us, and collectively us, to return to the spiritual world, to end samsara, the cycle of birth and death, and with that comes these two things, attachment and detachment. So mentioned in the viraktir is detachment. So detachment from the temporal, the impermanent, using our time in such a way that we don't pursue the impermanent, chasing after shadows and finding happiness when the shadow configuration looks nice, and finding unhappiness when the shadow configuration looks not nice. It's all within the mind. It has nothing to do with the soul's real identity. I remember as children, one of the things that we did was we'd look at the sky and see the clouds, and then very excitedly say what we saw in the clouds. It was like a game. So, there's a pussycat in the sky. There's no pussycat in the sky, it's a cloud. And then the cloud would change and become a dragon. It's a dragon. And then we'd all gasp. And then it would just dissipate, it'd become vapor. It's not any better or any in principle different than adults playing the game of happiness and distress due to configurations of matter. And pursuing the happiness and trembling at the distress of the configurations of matter when it has nothing to do with who we really are. We may address those things, temporal things, in a befitting manner, but not the repose of our happiness is the particular configuration of matter today, or this week, or this year, or this part of my life, or my life. Because it's going to be what it is, and it's not what reality is in any case. So where our shelter is, the Vedic, the process that we're being given, the process of devotional service, is shelter of the internal potency. And on our theme of the weekend, eternal time. So, detachment. And mana shunyata. Very nice term. Mana shunyata is absence of false prestige. Amanina, manadena. Mana shunyata. What is false prestige? I have something. And envy is when somebody else has something or has more of that something than I have. It's silly. But it's when you don't have shelter in Krishna, that's the program. Pride and envy. So, mana shunyata. It's just the cat and the dragon vaporize. It's no longer. Mana shunyata. And ashabandha, great hope. That phrase is found in Nectar Devotion, where Prabhupada calls it hope against hope. Hope against hope is, there's a verse by Rupa Goswami that accompanies this, where he analyzes his own condition. And his own condition is embarrassing, like we might analyze our condition. You know, be realistic about things, and it's very embarrassing. We're attached to so many illusory things. He goes on and says, I'm not born in a good family, don't have any intelligence. You know, he berates himself in so many ways. But there's one thing. You're very merciful. And that is giving me great hope. Although I'm unqualified. I'm shameless. I'm disqualified. But still I'm seeking your shelter. That's my only hope. But it's a great hope. It is the only hope. Not just because we're, you know, insignificant and very covered. It's the essence of hope. And one who has taken, utilized time properly, which includes, again, with the injunction comes prohibition, not wasting time. Has anybody, including myself or besides myself, noticed since we've had this discussion, like there's a spotlight on the time-wasting things that we do? Have you noticed? Time-wasting, just like habitual, dull, dumb, time-wasting things. And wouldn't it be nice to convert the time-wasting things into elevating things? Where would we be if we did that? Just that. So the hopefully, well, I'm sure it will happen. I have great hope. Ashabandha. through the course of all of what we've been discussing over this weekend together, on this side, more. On that side, less. And part of how you get more is you do some less over here and put in that space, the time-wasting space, the approaching of Krishna. Instead, it has to be like, well, Krishna is very kind and he can just yank you out of your slumber and shake you a bunch. That can happen too. But why make Krishna go through that trouble, huh? We can consciously choose to not go to the time-wasting stuff and proper utilization of time instead. Just put in that space, proper utilization of time. And we'll feel something like, wow, that feels good. Tendency will be, when you're not attentive, it goes to the default position, the time-wasting, you know, the habit. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in Tattva Viveka, I believe, a whole section on overcoming bad habits. And so we have bad habits. Otherwise, we'd be in different consciousness. We all have some bad habits, whenever they may be more than others and whatever it is. Some less harmful, some more harmful. So we kind of retain the less harmful ones, thinking, well, it's not so harmful. And it's only in moderation. I don't do it too much. If those were to disappear consciously, so he writes, it may take a number of years. I forget, I think he says it's 5 years. 5 years to overcome a bad, like completely gone. Not like it's gone and then it appears again. It's like mowing your lawn. there may be weeds in your lawn, so you mow your lawn. And, you know, the dandelions aren't, boop. But wait a while, because the root's still there, boop. They come back. So how to uproot those tendencies? The bhakti process has the potency. And so if one continues to follow in the ways that we've been hearing, this is the stage that will come. And samutkanta, eagerness for Krishna, and detachment from Maya, eagerness for Krishna, detachment from Maya. That's how we, where we turn our attention, how we utilize the time, because it's an energy. It's Krishna's internal energy or Krishna's external energy. It acts differently according to how we turn our attention to Krishna. And we're making choices. It's not that once upon a time we made a bad choice and we came to the material world and so now we're stuck. We're continuing to make choices. Free will didn't stop. It wasn't an event. It's an ongoing condition of the soul. We're continuing to make free will choices. So the bhakti process is to change the channel from Maya channel to Krishna channel. We can do it. We're given the resources to do it. Lots of resources to do it. And this weekend is one of those resources. Taking, you know, everything together. One of the phrases in this verse that devotees know the best, nama gane sadaruchi. Having a ruchi, a taste for chanting the holy name. And asaktis, taste is one stage, and then there's attachment is the further stage in the process of bhakti. Attachment for what? Tad gunakani, gunakyane, to engage in hearing the glorification of the guna, the qualities of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna, the wonderful loving exchanges of Krishna, the topics of Krishna, attachment. And when there's that attachment, there's the other detachment. So it's a gradual process because of our attachment to other things. But we need to cultivate. So the topic, the heading that I gave for this section is, our life belongs to Krishna forever. Like, forever. We thought otherwise, and we came here, and it didn't turn out the way that we thought it would. But we kept trying. And it still didn't turn out the way that we thought it would. But we kept trying. And, you know, the forces of material nature are such that it's like even we didn't want to keep trying, we kept trying. The modes of nature and karma and the urges, pride and jealousy, lust and greed, delusion, madness, just like we're a punching bag, just getting worked over by these forces of material nature. And it's not nice being a punching bag. We thought it would be enjoyment, and it turned out something different. And once caught up in that program, it's very difficult to extract oneself. Even you try to extract yourself. Even you try to apply yourself to the means of extraction. It requires a lot of mercy. It requires great endeavor and requires an eagerness for the mercy, descending mercy of Krishna. So I'm just going to say a few summary things. It's like to wrap up least my contribution, maybe some of the others' contributions. When speaking about time and the proper utilization of time, one of the references that Prabhupada would often make was reference to Chanakya Pandit. So it's not a scriptural reference, but it's an authoritative reference that he often referred to. Chanakya Pandit said that a wise person is one who understands the value of time. And he explains the value of time in the following way. If you miss one moment with having been not properly utilized, supposing you want to go back and redo that moment, you can't. Supposing you're a wealthy person, supposing you offered millions and millions of gold coins, let me give me back this one moment. Millions and millions of gold coins can't buy back one moment. That's how valuable is one moment. So how much we should value that one moment. But Chanakya Pandit's statement is not standing alone, just a nice statesman. Here's a quote from Vishnu Purana, where the same is also said. Sahanis tad mahachidram samoham sa cha vibramaha. Vibramaha. Vibrama? Great mistake. Big illusion. Moha. Deluded. There's nothing more deluding than this one. And the greatest, in the translation, the greatest anomaly, Mahachidram, the greatest anomaly. So I'll read the translation. Snyan Muhurtam. Remember that chart with the different divisions of time? Triti was the first one on the list. Muhurta wasn't even in the list, but that's another division of time. Snyan Muhurtam Kshanam, having wasted a moments of time. Vasudevam na chintayet, having not remembered Vasudev, a moment passed of not thinking of Krishna. It's the greatest misfortune. It's the greatest delusion. It's the greatest anomaly. Prabhupada has translated like that. Even for a moment, if remembrance of Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is missed, that is the greatest loss, the greatest illusion, and the greatest anomaly. What's an anomaly? There's the norm, and there's the anomaly. What's not normal? Of course, in the material world, forgetting Krishna is the norm. And remembering Krishna is the anomaly. But from the transcendental perspective, the Vishnu Purana perspective, as far as the souls that are in the spiritual world, those that are in the material world, the very, very, very tiny portion, fraction, but those in this world, the forgetfulness of Vasudev is the greatest anomaly, the greatest deviation or irregularity, because that leads to all the other irregularities, the things we don't like. Maybe some of you were here when we had the theme for the retreat in Gita Nagari was say yes to Krishna. And I saw in somebody's refrigerator, they made the button into a magnet, put a magnet on the back, and there was a say yes to Krishna button. So everyone wore a say yes to Krishna button. And one of the things that we did, there was like a workshop session where somebody got out the flip chart and So the person that was writing down was to write down, people would raise their hand, what are things that you don't like? And it started, like most things start, a little slowly. But it got to be like 7, 8, 9, 10 pages of things we don't like. And everyone was laughing and laughing and, you know, we don't like this, things we don't like. There's lots of things we don't like. Like, it's hilarious how many things we don't like. In a place that's, we're trying to be the enjoyer. So how do you change the I don't like to say yes to Krishna? Because you can't change the circumstance. Krishna says it in Bhagavad Gita. That do not think, never think, that you're the cause of action, or you're the cause of the result of action, or that you induce others to act. All this is being carried out by material nature. And material nature isn't under our direction, it's under Krishna's direction. Maya Jyakshina Prakriti. So when you say yes to Krishna, then you make your what you feel, you know, the mind, and your behavior, the body, becomes different because of the consciousness that's behind the mind and the body, you know, the soul, and the consciousness of Krishna. And you change things to Krishna consciousness, your mind changes, the soul changes, as we have been saying. Even matter changes and how matter acts on you. And time moves from the illusory temporal to the eternal. You can start to see Krishna behind everything. And then you can connect with Krishna who's behind everything and leave the temporal and enter into the eternal. It's very nice. It works. If we just say yes to Krishna. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshastakam, there are several references to time, but one of them is on this theme of our life belongs to Krishna forever. Yugayatam nimeshena. So we know what yuga means. That's like a lot of time. And nimesha is very little time. Nimesha, by the way, is less than a second. So when there's attachment for Krishna, the feeling of separation from Krishna seems, for even a nimesha, seems like a yuga. 10,000 years or more. Yuga is much more than 10,000 years. Utilizing time properly is bring our attention to Krishna, just like chanting. Bring your attention to Krishna. Not just make the sound, but bring your attention to the sound. That's too hard. Let me just make the sound. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare. And attention is all over the place. So part of our challenge is not just make the sound, but bring our attention to the sound. And when we bring our attention to the sound, we're bringing our attention to Krishna. And we bring our attention to Krishna, and we go to Krishna. We're with Krishna. And that means the external influences don't act on you in the same way they acted on you when you were just making the sound or didn't even make the sound. You're transported to Krishna. And that means out of the illusory condition. Very fortunate. Very simple. But it's so hard. Because of our conditioning and our attachment. So that attachment to Krishna carries one to the position where where there's even a moment of forgetfulness of Krishna, like this Vishnu Purana, quote, the greatest misfortune, the greatest calamity, the greatest anomaly. And then the opposite, even a moment of, as in the Bhagavatam's language, second canto, even a moment of pure consciousness is more valuable than the longest duration of life. Do not the trees live a long time? Prabhupada would speak, the redwood trees, they're thousands of years old. So what's more valuable, the life of Lord Chaitanya or a redwood tree? Which is more valuable, a moment of pure consciousness or a long, long life devoid of consciousness of Krishna? So it's reprioritizing so much of what we've been hearing and discussing is reprioritizing our value system. And again, quoting, we regard things differently that we value than things that we don't value. So, avyartha kalatvam is in this list. Valuing time and wishing to not waste time. Artha, avyartha kalatvam, not to waste even a moment. Being very anxious. I remember as a new devotee in the Brooklyn Temple, the previous Brooklyn Temple, the one on Henry Street, where Prabhupada wrote a letter to our head pujari, who had written to Prabhupada. The head pujari wrote to Prabhupada saying, there's not enough time in the day to do everything for Radha Govinda. And then she knows whatever else she wrote about what she does. And Prabhupada wrote back, my dear disciple, my dear spiritual daughter, it's so nice to see that you've attained the stage of bhava. It's very generous. That you're just anxious to see that every moment is used in Krishna's service, and you don't want to waste a moment not used in Krishna's service. So the sadhana stage leads to the bhava stage. So it's good to know where the train's going when you get on the train. Where are we headed? What's our goal? And it's not like the ecstatic moment, the anticipation of, you know, like a high experience. It's just the condition of attachment to Krishna without any baggage, without any selfishness. And everything that goes with material existence, thinking of my enjoyment first, or at least like high importance. Krishna's happiness. And so we cultivate like that, knowing where the goal is. Just a few other things and I'll end. We've often heard in Prabhupada's writings about this precious human form of life. Yes, this precious human form of life. Precious. That's speaking about something that you value. Like, you know, where you put your valuables is in a safe place because they're valuable. We don't want to leave them, you know, where they can be stolen or lost or somehow damaged. So, like we say, precious stones. There's stones, then there's precious stones. Like, you know, very, very special precious stone, diamonds and other nice names of precious stones. So the human form of life, Prabhupada compared to preciousness. The precious human, it's highly valued. Vedic culture teaches us to value this gift because it's very rare and very valuable. And if used properly, it gives us the greatest thing. So the precious human form of life, this is one of the ways to think of it, is not just the body, but the time that we have available in this body to achieve the goal of life. So now I'm going to quote Prabhupada speaking on this point, the precious human form of life. If you are not developing your love of Godhead, simply following the rituals, the Bhagavad says, Shrama eva hi kevalam. Simply laboring, simply wasting your valuable time. That's all. Don't waste your time. You have got very precious life in this human form of existence. Again, don't waste your time. Just try to increase your love of Godhead. That is the perfection of your life. That's a quote from a lecture in Montreal in 1968. Like, you know, his fledgling, newest, spanking new bhaktas. This is Prabhupada's teaching. And this is from a Bhagavatam purport. Men are naturally apt to hear histories and narrations of various personalities performing mundane activities without knowing that by such association, one simply wastes valuable time and also becomes addicted to the three qualities of mundane nature. Instead of wasting time, one can get spiritual success by turning his attention to the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, by hearing the narration of the pastimes of the Lord. One contacts directly the personality of Godhead, and, as explained before, by hearing about the personality of Godhead from within, all accumulated sins of the mundane creature are cleared. Thus, being cleared of all sins, the hearer gradually becomes liberated from mundane association and becomes attracted to the features of the Lord. From the verse that we just recited, do you see embedded in Prabhupada's purport in Canto 1, Chapter 5, the elements of inviting his audience in his purports to come to the bhava stage? When we become more familiar with the scriptural basis, the scriptural texts, and then you go back and read Prabhupada's purports again, you'll see that practically every sentence, there's some things where he's commenting about current events or things, but otherwise, practically every sentence, it's just a... it's like a smoothie. It's just like a pablumized, really goes down really easy, yummy, nice presentation of very strong scriptural statements, practically word for word. Prabhupada's purports are brilliant. This is an advertisement. Read Prabhupada's books and associate with our founder Acharya. He's made his lotus feet accessible, the fullness of his mercy accessible through the Bhaktivedanta purports. Associate with Prabhupada through his Bhaktivedanta purports. Whatever one you like. Some people say, should I read this one, that one? Whatever one you like. I mean, read systematically, that's nice. Read in the association of other devotees, that's nice. Discuss the topics with other devotees, that's what's intended. But read the Bhaktivedanta, associate with Prabhupada in this way. And do so regularly, and just exactly what just read from the purport takes place. I'll just read it again. By hearing the narration of the pastimes of the Lord, one contacts directly the personality of Godhead, and as explained before, by hearing about the personality of Godhead from within, the accumulated sins of the mundane creature are cleared. That's us, by the way. And something magical happens. We're just reading the Bhaktivedanta purports and discussing with others, and this magic starts to happen. Our attraction for the mundane subsides. It disappears. The attraction for the mundane is the residue or the residual effect of our past free will choices. So we're carrying impressions, and those impressions are in the form of, one of the forms of them is desires. Desires may be dormant, and after some time they come out, and then we start acting on our desires, because that's what life is, right? We act on desires. And it binds us to delusion. So one of the stages of when we commit ourselves to our life belongs to Krishna forever, these things, through cultivation of that, if I make the declaration, like Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita, spiritual life is more or less declaring war on Maya, not with another nation, not with another person, not even yourself, but Maya, you know, the attraction for Maya, it's declare war. And if you're going to declare war, you better be ready, because Maya doesn't, you know, say, okay, I quit. Here's my peace flag. I surrender. No. Prabhupada's example is like a prisoner, when it's known by the persons in charge of the prisoner, by the persons in charge of the prison, that a particular prisoner is trying to escape. They put on double, triple, quadruple surveillance. You know, four or five people just, you know, put him in solitary confinement in a padded cell and 10 locks and don't let the guy out because he's trying to escape. That's what happens when you declare war on Maya. But Krishna's very kind. He'll help you. And the door opens just like, you know, when Krishna wanted to leave the prison of Kamsa. It was cool. He told Vasudev, don't worry. The guards will fall asleep. The dogs, they'll fall asleep too. The locks on the door, they'll fall off. Let's go. And don't worry about it's the dead of night. I'm luminous. And don't worry about the storm in the river Jamuna. I'll make the river part. Let's go. And off they went to the other side of the river Jamuna. When Krishna is helping you escape the clutches of Maya, she listens. Don't try to escape the clutches of Maya without Krishna. You're in big trouble. It won't work. So that's how we use our time. Not just like get rid of the miseries, and we're not liberationists, salvationists. We're bhaktas, or trained to become. The mood of service, wishing to simply let our life be forever in Krishna's service, in Krishna's shelter. And there'll be, you know, there's things. There's like challenges and hard times and, you know, good times, and one becomes enjoyer of the good times. And so just stay, cultivate, staying fixed with the shelter of the mercy of Krishna, his loving relationships and his loving devotees. And in a similar way, kind disposition to other living entities, because they're Krishna's parts and parcels also. They're part of Krishna's family, as are we. and be kind, and stay fixed on Krishna's happiness. Serve Krishna. Use your time that way in this valuable human form of life. And these results will come in due course of time. Hare Krishna. So any comments or discussion? Donna Kelly?
Maharaj, I would just like a clarification on a couple of points that were made. Well, one was made yesterday. We were discussing that two different people might take the Krishna consciousness in one a more efficient way and one in a less efficient way.
Your question again, yeah.
Due to one person being attached and one person being more detached by nature. And you were mentioning, well, that's their nature because we're individuals, etc. Like from the past lives, we have these natures. Yet today, we're hearing that we're responsible for, at every moment, making conscious choices as to how we utilize our time, how much we practice detachment, etc. So I'm still needing some clarification on this point about when a person's when we experience our practice of Krishna consciousness being a little slow, like the slow boat, due to our having attachments, is it by choice that we're maintaining attachments? Because like we hear the one of the offenses to the holy name is to maintain attachments, even after understanding so many instructions on the matter.
Okay.
So, yet we're being told that we're making choices.
Yes, we are. We are. It's both. They're not contradictory. So I just express it this way. It's an offense to maintain attachments, but the clearing stage, which is different than the pure stage, clearing stage is I'm trying to overcome my attachments. Now, let me be realistic. Let's say from the teacher's perspective or the student's perspective. From the teacher's perspective, here is one whose trajectory of spiritual life is they're by nature more detached. Here's another one who by their nature is more attached. So if I as the teacher should not expect the one that's more attached to perform the same capacity as the one who's more detached. So that's the thorn to remove the thorn in steps that are with regulation of the attachment, but bringing simultaneously focus on attention that goes to Krishna, which will bring cleansing and thereby further detachment from the temporal. From the student's side, let me be realistic. Not now I have a license to be attached. So I'm going to maintain my attachments because I have a license for it. That's the offense. But the clearing is being realistic by self-appraisal. I'm realistic where I'm at. And if I try to do that, it's not sustainable. If I can do this, that's sustainable. So let me do this in a regulated fashion, in under the direction and guidance of my teacher, and bring my attention to Krishna while I'm dealing with this attachment thing. Not maintaining it, but trying to go beyond it through prescriptions of my teacher and the Vedas and the process of bhakti. Having this great faith, I'll eventually get beyond the attachment phase. I'm striving for going beyond the attachment phase into the detachment.